Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Inside the Cylinder, a Detroit Pistons podcast. This is episode 113, and we are really just in the midst of the tank here. This is your boy, David Fernandez, writer over at DetroitBadBoys.com, and I am joined, as always, by Matt Way. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, David. Glad to be with you. Glad you're back after last week. I just want to quickly apologize to everybody for. I know the audio was a little rough last week. We had a rough night, but we do appreciate Duncan coming on, and hopefully this episode's audio will be better for everyone as we talk a little bit about the Pistons and the tank progress, I think.
Well, they do call me the Dr. Dre of localized, tank-worthy NBA podcast producers. So, you know, having that throne is something that's important to me. I don't know how many people have said that, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that around just when I'm walking around in the streets. Like, oh, is that Dr. Dre of Inside the Cylinder? Localized Detroit Pistons podcasting. It's like, yeah, that's definitely me. So no worries. No autographs either. So as I said, we're in the midst of the tank. We put up a pretty tank worthy effort. I was kind of biting my fingernails there in a losing effort to the Charlotte Hornets. Matt, I know you just posted the Hornets recap game over on DetroitBadBoys.com. So go check that out, everyone. I guess, you know, having it, you just freshly put pen to paper, anything that sort of stood out to you that you want to talk about this game?
Well, it was certainly the night of Hamidou Diallo and Sekou Doumbouya. They were two of the five of in the starting lineup. Josh Jackson sat, Mason Plumlee, Corey Joseph, Jeremy Grant continue to sit. And, the three rookies really struggled tonight, especially from the field, just shooting. Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, Killian Hayes all had really poor shooting nights. But Hamidou Diallo really kept the Pistons in the game the whole way. Detroit was – they were losing pretty much the entire game, but it was never really out of reach. Ended with a Killian Hayes miss to send the game into overtime. And then Sekou Doumbouya was also great. I thought he and Diallo both did a great job getting downhill, and Charlotte really had no chance of defending them in their drives or at the rim. They finished very well. They both made – I think Sekou made 2 3-pointers. Diallo made 3 when the Hornets did close the driving lanes. Just very impressive performances from both, and it's especially encouraging to see from Sekou. I noted in the recap, I saw a couple times where he was actually like directing traffic kind of offensively, even when he didn't have the ball yet. And he's just looking a lot more comfortable on the court. He has a much better idea of what he needs to do with the ball, without the ball. And, I definitely have seen some improvements from him in terms of his processing of what's happening, especially offensively. And I thought it kind of all culminated tonight in a great 20-point performance.
Yeah, it was, you know, you saw Sekou scoring on in three levels tonight. You know, it wasn't just something where he hit, made a nice couple of cuts or he hit, you know, an open three here or there. You know, he had a really nice couple drives to the basket. He had a nice couple possessions back to the basket. Confidently stepped up, as you mentioned, went 2 of 5 from three tonight. And just really seemed to sort of put it all together for, I think he was in the game for like 35 minutes or so. So he was impactful and definitely was part of the reason why they were able to keep this game close throughout the first half. And then Hamidou just sort of kept it cruising all game long. He was also putting the ball on the floor really impressively. I think he hit 4 threes actually, but that, I mean, that's just, you're not going to expect that from him every single night, but he was really confident in the way that he was looking for his shot. And then also, you know, just executing. So it was good to see a couple of the guys that, you know, we've been talking about how well Sadiq's been playing for a while now. We've been talking about the same thing from Stewart, and then Frank Jackson's just been on a tear as of late. So it's really nice to see a couple of guys that haven't necessarily put it together for, I mean, although Hamidou's been playing pretty well as of late recently, but not to this level where there's, you're saying like, hey, you know, these guys are getting buckets tonight. And both of them were able to do that in really impressive fashion. And both were, you know, really consistent just all night long. So it's just nice to see a couple other guys get a little bit of shine, you know, as we sort of close out this season.
For sure. And, you know, I think there was some warranted concern about how Hami had played recently. You know, he had, you mentioned that he's been better, I guess recently, that's a relative term. But you know, he had a 1 or 2 month stretch after his strong start where he really was struggling to finish. Just looked a little uncomfortable, and that definitely went away. One of the plays, you know, I want to just note a couple of plays from each of them, or one from each of them. Diallo had this like on the move, going to his left, pull up, like quick little flick of the wrist, in rhythm 3-pointer that he made that I thought was just like, we just haven't seen something like that from him. It's in my post. It was a Twitter clip from Pistons Talk. So check that out, because that was, you know, we've mostly seen him shooting with no one attempting to close out, and he sits there and waits forever and then makes the shot. But this was like a off the dribble in rhythm three, which was nice. And then the play by Sekou that really impressed me was where he, because it showed off everything that he was doing tonight, the aggressiveness, the patience. He made a nice aggressive move to the basket when there was a driving lane. Three Hornets caught up to him. He backed down someone. I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Caleb Martin. And just made a really nice patient move and hit a little like under or up and on, or I guess just a little a hook shot or a scoop shot. Sorry. With his left hand that looked good and went in. And that was kind of, I thought it was just an exemplification of what Sekou did tonight. He was making the right decisions when the situation's called for whatever it was that he was doing. And that was a great example of it, I thought.
It's really something that you hope can continue, especially for Sekou, you know, as this season comes to an end. You know, it would be really, really nice to see him put together a stretch for this final week and change of the season and finish strong, just because it's something that we've all been waiting for. And you and I have talked about it. Like, you see it here in like snippets, you know, a good play here, a good play there, but it would be awesome if he would be able to sort of capitalize on this performance and sort of keep that energy going for the remainder of the season. He's definitely going to get the looks. It doesn't seem like the Pistons are going to be trotting out any type of traditional lineup, I guess, if that even makes any sense anymore, but you know, for the remainder of the year. So that's something that I'm really hopeful of and that I'm going to be keeping my eye on, just because it's going to be, you know, we're going to be in Detroit Bad Boys, like, player review, like player preview season coming up here. So if we can sort of ride out this wave and have him continuing. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to score 20 points every single night, obviously, but just to be impactful and to look engaged and to, you know, continue just to make the right plays. I think that we're all going to be feeling a lot better about him going into the offseason into next year.
Frankly, it might be the difference between him being here next year and not. You know, it seems like a lot to put on him for 6 or 7 games, however many it is at this point. But you know, he's going to get his chances in those games, and so it really could, I think, be the difference of whether we see him on the roster next year or not.
I think that's a fair assessment. But I did want to just talk really quickly about, you know, some of the bad of tonight. Killian Hayes, you know, he played 28 minutes tonight. He went 1 of 6 from the floor, 1 of 5 from three. He missed the initial, I guess, game tying free throw attempt to finish out the game. And then he took a really bizarre, I don't really know why he was taking that three to begin with, to finish out the game. And that resulted in a 3-point win for the Charlotte Hornets. All in all, Killian, this was for me one of the worst performances that I've seen out of him. And I don't mean that just from like a basketball sense, but the confidence wasn't there. You were seeing a lot of him just dropping his head. He does this pretty regularly, honestly. Like he will beat himself up after a bad play. But it just was not there for him tonight. Like he didn't play well on defense. He didn't, you know, he wasn't very impactful, you know, getting into the paint. I had watched Kevin O'Connor's video about Killian Hayes and you know, telling everyone to sort of pump the brakes and not call him a bust. And I loved the video. I thought he did a really good job of breaking down Killian's game. But even tonight, you would see opportunities. I remember once in this game, he had just a wide open lane, like to the cup. It was an opportunity where he could have either gone up for a dunk or gone up for an up and under, or even, you know, stopped and tried to hit a floater. But it was so, he also could have just gone straight up to the cup and tried to get a little bit of contact and get to the free throw line. He had like about 6 different options that he could have done to score, and he just whipped it out to Frank Jackson, I think was the recipient of that pass, if I'm remembering the play correctly. And it's just all the sort of things where it's just like, you know, you are finding certain opportunities to score. And I don't know if it was because you weren't playing well in the first half or whatever it was, but you just want to see him go for it, even if it isn't a miss. Just, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not all about him shooting poorly, right? It's just about, you want to see them sort of making the right decisions when they have a wide open lane towards a cup, right? Like, that's not something that's a very difficult ask for an NBA player. But I think it was just a testament to how sort of rattled he was from this game. I don't know if it was like I'm going against LaMelo Ball type of situation or what was going on upstairs, but it was really a disheartening. It was a disheartening performance. You know, it was just something where it was a good opportunity to sort of play well against a fellow lotto pick from this past year's draft. And not that the moment was too big for him or anything like that, but in general, it was just not a great game. And I think it's something to note because I think there was some elements that I had seen in sort of the negatives from that O'Connor video that played out tonight. And you just hope that Killian is actually going to be one of these guys that we're talking about in the remainder of this season that is able to finally put together some sort of like really impressive offensive scoring performance. Not that he's ever going to be your lead dog and lead scorer on a team, but you do want to see something, you know, but and him look for a shot a little bit more aggressively. And that doesn't mean just settle for threes. So that was one thing I did want to know. It was definitely the low light for me of tonight's game.
Yeah, he's, you know, Killian just looks tentative to me, like a little bit in everything he does. You know, his passing is still great. His defense is still really good for especially a rookie point guard, but everything's just a little tentative, I think. And that might be partly just his inexperience, his age. Part of it might, frankly, be coming back from the injury. I don't know, but it's definitely affecting what he's doing. there was concern, I think, post-draft, before we even saw him on an NBA floor, that he couldn't create space. And my sense is that that's not really that big of an issue. Like, he's not going to explode to the rim maybe, but he does show an ability to create space, and he doesn't have the tightest handle or anything, but he finds ways because he's just a smart player. He doesn't quite know what to do right now when he does create that space, though. And, you know, Dwayne Casey has a couple quotes from after the game about that, about him. Let me pull it up because I want to just – I think they were very they're very correct. He said and this is from James Edwards' tweet. Says, Casey wants Hayes to either get all the way to the rim with force or continue to find open shooters on perimeters. Wants him to limit the runners. And I saw another quote about I think it was from Casey as well, saying basically that, like, defenses are trying to force him into those runners. And they really are, I think, on some level, giving him the middle of the paint or, you know, the free throw line area, because he doesn't quite know what to do when he gets there right now. And, you know, he's definitely going to need to develop that. It doesn't concern me all that much. If we're seeing it midway through next year, I think that's a bigger issue. The shooting doesn't bother me at all, because I think his shot looks so good, and I have confidence that he's eventually going to be a good shooter.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I think when I saw that play develop, and the one that I had mentioned about him kicking it out when he had the lane, my first thought was maybe he is just scared of contact right now, just sort of due to the hip, obviously. And I couldn't blame him for, you know, being a little tentative when it comes to banging with the trees down low. He actually did have a nice play to finish out the game, which got him to that free throw line, even though he missed one of those attempts where he did welcome contact on Bismack Biyombo, which was encouraging to see. I guess there's just certain elements that I saw tonight where it's like, dude, you have Zeller on you and you're on an island right now. Like, just go at him. Like, just you figure, you know, even if you don't, you get your shots swatted from behind. I don't care, but you do want to see, like, you're the point guard and you're going against a dinosaur of a center. So, yeah, I would see no fault in saying, hey, you know, this is a situation where you need to be in attack mode. But you're right. I'm not writing the book on him. I'm not saying, I'm not noting, I'm not pulling any alarms or anything like that. But I am just really hopeful, I guess, just in general, after seeing Diallo, after seeing Dumboya put together a performance tonight, I'm still like holding on to hope to just see one sort of game where it's just like, okay, I'm going to get mine and the shots are going to fall, just because that will have me feeling personally, just having me feeling a little bit better going into this offseason.
No, for sure. And I totally agree with you. And, you know, the play that you mentioned, he might end up frustrating some people with some of those, you know, where you have kind of a layup, but you find an open shooter instead, because that's just kind of his nature. Like, that's who Killian Hayes is. He loves to pass the ball. He loves to find shooters, and he does that. And I think that's always going to be something that he will do to some degree. I think he'll learn to get his own shot a little better, but you know, what has been encouraging, I think, and you mentioned the Biyombo play where he got to the free throw line, and that's been a concern, because that might be my biggest concern. He just hasn't gotten to the free throw line. That and his refusal sometimes to use his right hand, that's something he's going to need to certainly for sure develop. And you see it even in a non-shot. Like, there was a play tonight where he really should have switched to his right hand and turned the corner, but instead he kept it with his left. So he had to, he was cutting to his right. So he had to kind of get further away from the defender to save his dribble. Like, that's something that has to come. We have seen some situations. I think you saw in the first Hornets game where he kind of felt, I think, challenged after the Pistons kind of put up a stinker in the first half, and he really battled hard and looked really good doing it in the second half. I don't remember the opponent, but there was There was a game a few weeks ago where he was really aggressive getting to the rim, and he got to the free throw line and he made a couple layups, a couple floaters at the end of a close game. So like you see those flashes, but we would definitely love to see an extended game of that before the year's over.
For sure.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Well, I guess that's enough of, just the Hornets recap for now. But should we move on to our next topic?
Yeah.
All right. So this is pretty much what everyone is paying attention to most. It's the tank, and we've talked about it before, but now we are really getting close to the end of the season. So it's good to monitor where everything stands. And these are obviously based on results, subject to change. So if you listen to this episode on Thursday, it might not be completely up to date. But with that being said, right now, Detroit is the second worst team in the league. They two nights ago had lost a barn burner to the Magic. They lost another game, obviously, tonight to the Hornets. They have a massive game coming up next week against the Timberwolves. And, it's I had pulled up 538 projections for the projected record, and this is updated as of tonight. So right now, the Pistons are projected to finish with the second worst record in the NBA. And that is, they would be a game, I guess, ahead of the, they would be a game ahead of the Oklahoma City Thunder, one game ahead of the Cavaliers, two games ahead of the Timberwolves, and two games ahead of the Magic for that second worst record. So, since we last recorded, we were really expecting them to finish third or fourth in the standings. And thanks to the Timberwolves sort of figuring it out as of late, and the Thunder snuck a win randomly, and the Pistons had a big lead on them. The Pistons have really put themselves in as good as position as possible to nab one of these top five picks. And I guess, have you had any thoughts about what you've been monitoring from a tanking perspective, not just from the Pistons, but from around the NBA there, Matt?
They're tanking more overtly than I expected them to be, frankly. It seems like we're not going to get Corey Joseph, Jeremy Grant, Mason Plumlee the rest of the year, which is certainly good for the tank. And you're going to see, I guess Josh Jackson had a tooth problem tonight, which maybe that's legit. Like that could be
sore right tooth,
pretty painful. I mean, if it's true, like it could be, that kind of thing can be pretty awful.
For sure.
But yeah, like just those, every little thing, like turned your ankle going in, but you're totally fine. Yeah, we're gonna put you on the injury report.
Woke up on wrong side of bed.
Yeah, right. that would be a good one. With Minnesota, they're playing way better. They're healthy. They're gonna win more games than the Pistons, I think, certainly over the stretch run, even just not looking at the schedules. So the Pistons being two games up from fourth place, you know, they've got a pretty good chance at getting the number two spot, I think. I think last time we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, we were thinking they would maybe be fourth, possibly fifth, probably not third, and no chance of second. And that's just completely flipped in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking at Detroit's remaining schedule right now, and their two easiest opponents would be the Minnesota Timberwolves, which they have a game with next week, and the Chicago Bulls. I've watched quite a few Timberwolves game as of late. They frankly are just a better team than Detroit, especially if they're playing Karl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and Anthony Edwards. The Chicago Bulls are probably the scariest team for me when it comes to like a surprise win, even though they're going to be trying to win games, just because they're still in that sort of no man's land in between like the lottery and possibly getting all the way to the play-in tournament, even though it's looking less and less likely by the game for them. So those are, I don't necessarily know if they'll both be losses, but definitely they're two, I guess, easiest opponents left. And then if you look at their more difficult opponents, they have the 76ers, Nuggets, Heat, and Grizzlies. Heat and Grizzlies are definitely going to be trying to win games. Their playoff certainty is not set in stone right now. And then you also have, I guess, with the Sixers and Nuggets, it might just depend on where they're currently at in the standings and if they, you know, are still fighting for the one seed, because they are probably going to be engaged, just because if you're the one seed in the Eastern Conference, you don't have to play both the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks. If you're two or three, then you would have to go through two of the three top teams in the East in order to make it to the NBA final. So I could see them fighting as well as this season continues. So it's definitely something that will be interesting to sort of follow. The Cavaliers have been putting together some super tank-worthy efforts, including losing tonight's game 20-4 in overtime to secure an L. So their team to watch, the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have a tougher schedule than Detroit, have put together one of the absolute stinkiest tank performances I've seen, at least in the last couple of years. So they're a team that you'll have to watch out for. But all in all, you know, we already said it, it's really kind of impressive to see Detroit down there at two right now and to be projected to finish with the second worst record.
Yeah, shout out to anyone who had the Suns minus 12 tonight. That was a heck of a cover. In terms of the only other thing I have to add, the one thing with Chicago is their pick goes to Orlando as a result of the Vucevic deal, if they are outside of the top four. So they could be trying to tank pretty hard. I don't know. It doesn't actually look like they can really get a whole lot worse than they can't really get behind Cleveland and Orlando, so maybe not. But with Zach LaVine coming back from COVID, Vucevic being out, they might just shut it down and restart next year. So that game actually appears to me to be a whole lot, probably by far the easiest game the rest of the year, because I would expect Minnesota to be a bit better than Detroit, or at least to put a bit better lineup out there than Detroit can.
I'm kind of impressed with Minnesota. I mean, it's probably not the best like strategic move to start racking up W's at the end of this particular season for this squad, but I will say, you know, the basketball gods might favor something like that, just because they didn't lie down and die. And it is sort of nice to see those three guys all playing well at this particular junction in the season. Now, will it mean that the Golden State Warriors wind up with their pick and then everyone else has to sort of be very terrified going into next season? Possibly. But I will say that has been a bright spot for me, and not only because it's helping out Detroit, but also just from a basketball perspective. It's been nice seeing those three guys healthy and actually playing at the same time, because they've been really banged up and the guys have been missing games left and right. You know, they're two guys, Kat and D'Angelo Russell, you know, earlier this season. So I've been happy to see that out of the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I respect it. The tanking just always feels so dirty to me. And it's, I struggle with Detroit doing it, even though I know it certainly benefits them. So
I was just going to ask you, what are your thoughts on like the Pistons tanks right now? Just like Jeremy Grant, you know, has, you know, healthy scratches pretty much. There's no way if they were playing for the playoffs right now, these guys would be playing.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's totally the right move from a strategic standpoint. It just feels wrong to me. But I totally understand why they're doing it. And you're at the point in the year where you're not worried that it's going to like affect your young guys or anything like that long term. In fact, your young guys are getting, you're getting a better look at all of them, and getting a better idea of what they can do, what they need to work on this summer, what kind of roles you might want to see them play in summer league. So this is certainly the time to just go all in on the youth.
And also, and this has been a narrative for Detroit all season, even though that they are putting together these types of lineups and, you know, they went against the Orlando Magic, who've put together a particular, you know, this, they, that's pretty much all that their roster is like a tank lineup at this point, but, they're still keeping it relatively close in at least the last few games. So that's been nice to see that the young guys sort of trying to like grit and grind their way to some of these wins. But it's just a, I guess it's a talent gap situation, or they're just not hitting the shots at the right time. It's all good, but it is, you're right. They're playing the young guys, but, and they're still fighting. So I think that that might just be good from these young guys sort of building their own smaller culture as sort of some of these guys will be part of this future moving forward too.
Yeah. You're never going to ask your young guys or any of your guys to not try. But the fact that they can compete despite having such a depleted roster, it says a lot about the makeup of the team. And I think that the job that Dwayne Casey and Troy Weaver have done in terms of building a culture in such a short time and in such a difficult time period.
For sure. Now, I just want to leave everyone with one number right now before we get to our next topic, and that is 80. So the number is 80. The Pistons, if they finish with the second worst record in the NBA, they will have 80% odds of landing a top five pick in the next year's draft, in this upcoming draft, I should say. It's actually 79.9 technically, but we'll just round that up to 80. So that would mean that they have a 20% chance of falling to the sixth spot, the dreaded sixth spot. But right now, if everything sort of shakes out as 538 says it's going to, which doesn't mean jack shit, but at the end of the day, there is a really, really good chance that Detroit does wind up with the second worst record, and they will have an 80% chance of landing a top five pick, which for me would be huge. It'd be big for my mental going into the draft lottery, because I know that I'm just going to be on just eggshells. I'm just going to be very nervous that day.
Yeah, well, it'll give us another great young player to talk about next season too. So I'm definitely cheering for it.
For sure. So the final topic, and this is just a quick hitter here, but did you listen to the Hoop Collective podcast this week?
I didn't. I've seen some stuff about it. The only Hoop Collective podcast I think I've listened to, I'm just not a big Windhorst fan. But the one that I did listen to was the one that he melted down, because I'm not a fan of him, which I did enjoy that one.
That one was hilarious. I wish there were more of them like that, to be honest with you. That was like uncut, some like bad feelings going on. They seem like they're actually okay now. Bontemps and Windhorst, but that was a funny one. I had to listen to it when I started hearing like Twitter clips from that morning. I was like, oh my God, something actually went down on the Hoop Collective. That's usually the most vanilla podcast that's out there.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. But my understanding is they did a redraft of this past draft. Is that right?
They did. They did a redraft with Mike Schmitz, who is now he's Draft Express, but he's, you know, on the ESPN staff now as well. And Kevin Pelton, who is an NBA writer, but he also focuses pretty heavily on the draft as well. So Just wanted to go over some of these picks real quick because they seem pretty high on Detroit overall. In the redraft, they had LaMelo going one, Anthony Edwards going two, Tyrese Halliburton going three, Patrick Williams staying at four, and then they went up and snagged Sadiq Bey with the fifth overall pick in the redraft. Thoughts on any of those guys in like the top five? Is that how you sort of would see if you were a is that how it would shake out on your board, Matt?
Yeah, probably something similar to that. I think the top three are definitely correct in that order. I'm maybe not as high on Patrick Williams as some people are. I just don't know what to make of him at this point. He might be really good, but I think he's got some holes to fill as well. So that all seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I honestly haven't watched enough Bulls this season to have a fully fleshed out thought on Patrick Williams, but I know they seem to like him a lot there. And I can see why that they would, just kind of from like a raw perspective as well, just why they would pick him. He's also very, very young. I think he's younger than like two or three of the guys that are projected to go in the top five next season. So that might have something to do with it as well. But it's impressive that Sadiq, who had just turned 22 years old, has gone that high in the redraft. I think it sort of gives me a little bit of just a sigh of relief in a certain sense that other people are seeing this Pistons rookie class the way that we have seen it, and that we're not just like having like localized blinders on right now. Sadiq's really just been so impressive so far this season. He's had some games where he's just gone off, but more so important than that, he's just been pretty damn steady, all things considered, especially being a rookie and playing as many games as he had in the starting lineup.
Yeah, do you know who drafted Sadiq?
The Brooklyn Nets.
No, whether it was Pelton or Smuts.
Okay. That was Pelton, I want to say.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I would imagine that Pelton would be pretty high on Sadiq. And I think I've heard him talk about him a couple times.
Yeah, and then I believe they had Denny Avdija. Went six again. Emmanuel Quickly went seventh to Detroit. And then let's just fast forward a little bit. Isaiah Stewart actually jumped James Wiseman and was selected 10th. I think that was also a Pelton pick. No, that was a Schmitz pick, I actually think. One thing to note here as well, no Killian Hayes was selected in the mock draft redraft. And this is strictly the lottery team. So I assume he would have been picked for sure later on in the first round, but was not selected in a lottery redraft. I guess any thoughts on the end of that there, Matt? Isaiah Stewart going all the way up to 10th and no Killian Hayes showing up in the top 14 picks?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see Isaiah get recognized like that. I haven't done a redraft like board myself, but I feel like I would have Isaiah at least that high. I'm so high on Isaiah, like long term. I think he could be so good. He just has the ability to do so many different things. He's showing that he can kind of be a pick and roll partner at all three levels, like whether he does a pick and pop, a hard roll. And we've seen him finish some lobs from Killian Hayes that I didn't think he was maybe capable of finishing. And he can also, you know, hit that elbow jumper. He can make the pass out of the short roll. His defense has been super impressive to me. So I would have Isaiah at least top 10. And I think he's definitely, I would have him definitely as the second big off the board after Okongwu, who I still think is a super high potential type of player.
Well, he was the first big off the board. Okongwu was after him, and then he was also ahead of Wiseman. Any thoughts on Killian Hayes not being picked in the top 14? And I know this is kind of throwing this at you just because you haven't don't have the list of names in front of you. But no, from what you've seen, does he look lotto picky to you from, I guess, some of the games that we've seen, like the good stuff, you know, obviously taking in some of the bad. But I think this is more about like a ceiling type of situation for Killian Hayes and not the floor.
Sure. So we're talking top 16, right?
14.
14, 14, sorry, yes. That was some bad on the fly math right there. I feel like I would have Killian in the top 14. Like, I mean, I would have Killian probably higher than most people would because I just really believe in him. But I think part of his drop in this sort of exercise is just a matter of circumstance where we just haven't seen him play this year hardly at all. And he, you know, he had that rough start. But I haven't seen anything out of Killian that like would make me think any less of him than where I did pre-draft. Like I might actually think more highly of him. I wasn't as high as a lot of Pistons Twitter was out of the draft, but I've come around to him, which seems weird because he clearly hasn't played well, but I just see the potential there. You know, outside of, you know, you have Edwards, Ball, Williams, Okoro, Okongwu, and you know, even give, you know, Stewart and Sadiq Bey, Halliburton, that's eight. Like, I feel he should definitely be in the top 14, but I also understand why people wouldn't put him in there because of how poorly he's played this season. I mean, I wouldn't take Emmanuel Quickly over him, even though Quickly's been clearly better this year.
Okay. Well, you heard it here. I also, when I was listening to this redraft episode, I should have had it all written out. So I'm sorry that I didn't because I don't know why I didn't, but in my mind, and I think this is me being a little bit of a homer, I was like, well, Stewart should definitely go higher than 10th just from what I've seen out of him and some of the names that were selected ahead of him. And then Killian Hayes, completely understand it. Everything that you just said makes complete sense. I don't blame anyone for saying, hey, let's wait and see on that kid. I wouldn't necessarily take him that high in a redraft. But for me personally, even though everything that I said to start out this episode, there has been a lot of positives out of Killian. I just kind of hope for him that he just starts beating himself up so much just because that's what that's the one thing that almost concerns me the most, even more than like aspects of his game, is sort of his mental. It's just sometimes you just want to like go give him a hug, or you want to like go pick his chin up for him and just say like, hey, dude, it's going to be all right. You're going to live to see another possession, because you just see him sometimes just with the shoulders slumped and the head looking down, and you know, it nothing's that bad. And I just hope that he can sort of continue to sort of take a step back and just sort of look at things from a bigger picture and not just sort of microanalyze possession by possession and what he could have done right or could have, you know, or where he went wrong or whatnot. That's just for me that a big step for him that I want to see out of him next season is just sort of a different mental approach to the game when he's actually on the floor and not to be so hard on himself.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And part of it, I think, might just be his demeanor. Like he's one of those guys who just never seems to get too high or too low. And so sometimes I think we might perceive him getting, I mean, he's definitely hard on himself. But I also don't think he like lets it affect him all that much, 'cause he just seems like a pretty even killed guy. I listened to a recent podcast. I mean, it's probably a few weeks old at this point, and I can't for the life of me remember who did it, but I want to say like Kevin Pelton was on there, and Killian definitely went in the top 10 in that. So I imagine you're going to get a pretty wide range of thoughts on Killian if you do this kind of redraft.
Yeah, I know that in the Athletic redraft, they had him going 8. So
maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that was with Hollinger, James Edwards.
Yes,
and I can't remember who the third person was.
Sam Vecenie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I understand that too. You know, I understand that, you know, people seeing the flashes. I think, and if you haven't watched that Kevin O'Connor video yet about Killian Hayes, I suggest you doing that. I think it gives you a really good perspective of the positives and negatives of his game and why you should continue to be really excited about him going into next season. But Matt, I don't really have anything else. You?
No, I think we covered probably more than we expected to, given the state of the Pistons.
It's a grind, man. This is a grind. This last week is going to feel like 3 months. We're going to be like Moses in the desert here. All right. Well, that is Inside the Cylinder. You can follow us on DetroitBadBoys.com, on the Detroit Bad Boys podcast stream, on all the major podcast streams, and then on Twitter at Inside the CYLNDR. And we will catch you all next week. Peace.